All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. Give you a quick heads up here, and then we'll get started. Calls are starting to come in, but if you're here right now, you've got a great chance of getting through. If you've got a question, a comment, a topic about anything at all, press 1 on your phone right now. The sooner you do it, the better the odds that you will get through. We're going to do Destination Health in the first hour. And then the second hour will be a free-for-all. We'll carry over health questions, and we'll take any questions at all in the second hour. So, again, the calls are starting to roll in, but if you press 1 on your phone right now, you've got a good chance of getting through. And we're going to get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers. The list goes on and on. And today is Destination Health. So joining me is my co-host, Kim Cockerham, and we will be taking your calls and answering your questions about everything health, food, nutrition, fitness, training, disease, injury, supplements, you name it. We'll talk about it here. All you have to do is pick up the phone and give us a call. And Kim, it's my favorite day of the week. Welcome back.
Thanks, Kevin. Glad to be here.
You know, I was thinking about something this morning. I've said many times on the trucking side of things that I'm glad I don't do a news-style show. And there are a couple of them. There's just not a lot of news in trucking. I read, several newsletters every day, and I read through the newsletter about all the trucking issues, and I think there's just not one thing in here I'm really interested in. Just there's not a lot going on. And right now, most of trucking seems to be a little slow. Fuel prices are down, so we haven't really been talking about fuel mileage. And then when I look at, you know, getting ready for this show, for this day when we do Destination Health, I am overwhelmed with mounds of new material. Like, as much as I read, and I read a lot, I can't keep up with all the new stuff coming out.
Yeah, and that's why I'm glad you do, because that's probably all of us do as well, because it's overwhelming, and one of your gifts is to break it down and, you know, share it with us, and then we get talking and we learn from our listeners, and we've kind of compacted it a little bit, which is cool. But I love the constant learning that's available and to bring back to our health. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and here's something I'm finding out that I really like, and I've talked about this before, but it's happening even more. In the beginning, when I first took on this task and I said I was going to read 100 books, when I got to 30 books, I thought it was hopeless. I was so confused. There were so many different opinions, this food, that nutrition, that diet, this causes heart disease, no, that causes heart disease, this is how you lose weight, no, this is how you... It was insane, and it was making me crazy, and everybody has their proof. Everybody has this study or this idea, and so it is completely overwhelming, and I thought, I don't even know what to do anymore. So the only thing I knew was to just keep reading. And by the time I started to get around 50 to 60 books, things started to get a little more clear. By the time I got to 100, I said, okay, I'm not going to claim to know everything. Nobody does. And there's so much we don't understand about our body. There's so much we don't understand about nutrients and about food that something else. We have to look at something other than all these studies and all these facts and all these opinions, because how did we survive and take over the entire planet if we didn't understand this stuff?
Mm-hmm,
and the way
mm-hmm.
we did it is, honestly, we don't need to understand this stuff. There is not another animal on the planet that needs a book to tell it what to eat. There isn't another animal on the planet that needs a drug to be alive and healthy. And they don't have to understand any of this stuff. Nature is just about perfect. It's amazing when you see our body doesn't need to know about nutrients or nutrition, or we should just eat food. You know, I last week
really?
I talked about Michael Pollan's book, and I love his mm-hmm. you know, saying, eat food, not too much, mostly plants. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, the more I see that, the more you couldn't sum it up any better in, you know, a couple sentences than what he's done. So the interesting thing is, there's a million things to learn about our body and nutrition, and I like learning it. It's interesting. But you know what? Most people don't have time for this. Most people have a life to live. They are tired of all the, you know, the latest hype and the fads, and nothing seems to be working, and we seem to be getting worse. The good news is we can make this really, really simple. You don't have to understand any of this. All you have to understand is, we survived and thrived on real food for a very, very long time, and that's all we need today. We just need real food.
Mm-hmm. And we can get back to it and get back to the simplicity of it.
Yeah, yeah, and we can make it more complicated from there. And, you know, I do like to learn more and find the optimal way of doing things, you know, kind of. We could look at, you know, vegetables and say, okay, vegetables are real food. That's a great place to start. And that may be the farthest you ever get. If you want to really go beyond that, then you could say, okay, but wouldn't organic be better? Yes, it would be. There's no pesticides, no herbicides. That's a good thing. Organic, the word has kind of been bastardized enough that organic still isn't, you know, perfect. There are some problems with our organic food supply. So you could say, well, what if you wanted to do even better? Well, then buy local. And honestly, I think local, especially small local farms, even if they're not organically certified, if you know that their practices are mostly organic, I think you're better off with local, not organically certified, than you are with big national organic brands. That's a fine distinction. Now, what if you said, well, I want to be as healthy as I could possibly be? Well, then maybe you grow your own and you control everything that goes into that food, and it's local, and you could do it organic. You wouldn't be certified, but you could certainly do it organically, and that would be like the ultimate. But honestly, just eat a lot more vegetables of any kind, and it's
mm-hmm.
going to be a huge improvement. So it's, you know, there's the spectrum of, you know, this is good, this is better, this is probably the best we could do. And if we keep that in mind, and, you know, take opportunities to seek out better foods, that would be wonderful. But the single biggest change I can see is just moving to real food. And
mm-hmm.
that's just going to be a huge focus of everything we talk about. And then we can move into, okay, as long as you're eating real food, you're probably going to be way healthier than everybody else. Then we could start talking about, are there better ways and better real foods? Well, yeah, of course there are. So I love it because we can make it wildly complex, and we can learn all kinds of new things and tweaks and hacks. And at the same time, we can just keep it real simple. You know, so this fits everybody. If you want to know next to nothing, you just want to be healthier, it's simple. You don't have to learn much other than eat real food.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I'm playing around with on the regular show, you know, on the regular show, usually the first segment I would have a topic or an idea or maybe something in the news, and I would do kind of a monologue, and then we'd move into the show. And on the truck side, honestly, I've been really struggling with stuff to open with. You know, I've covered many, many, many topics over the years, and I've recovered them and, you know, did an open on the same thing in a different way. And finally, I just looking at opens and I'm saying, you know, I've covered a lot of stuff a lot of times, and I'm having a harder time coming up with that open, with something new to, you know, kick off the show with. And then I had an idea that I had another problem is one of the podcasts I really want to do is Road Scholar, where we do book reviews. And it's just not coming together. And it's mostly my fault. It's my schedule. And we were going to do have the authors on the show. And I, you know, trying to work out that schedule is always difficult. So I've kind of been struggling with not getting that off the ground the way I want it. And then I thought, wait a minute, why don't I combine the two problems? So the idea now, and I just started this last week, is that I'll take that first segment of each show, and instead of doing a whole hour podcast on a book, I'll take the first segment and do a little bit at a time. And it might take me a week to review a book. I think we're going to do that here on Destination Health as well. And, of course, the books here that we'll focus on will all be about health and nutrition and food and training and all that stuff. And the good news is I have a big head start because I've read over 100 books already. So we're going to get to a break. We're going to come back. We've got a couple more things, and then we're going to get to your calls and questions. So stick around. We'll be right back. Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. My co-host Kim Cockerham is with me, and we're just talking in general about trying to help people avoid all the confusion and just not have to think so much about what it is that we eat. And the idea is eat as much real food as possible. Kim, I was talking about the book review. So I think one of the things you and I are going to start doing is when we open up Destination Health, we'll spend that first segment talking about a book. And if it takes us four or five or 10 shows, then that's what it takes. But I think that will really help people if they do want to continue learning. We'll give them an idea of what a book is all about, what you are probably going to learn from it, and then they can choose if they want to listen to that one or not. And if not, they'll probably learn a bunch just from our review.
Yeah, that's great. I'm excited for that.
Yeah, so this isn't a full-blown book review, but I asked you yesterday, you know, if we were going to open the show today with a book, is there a book that you haven't read yet, or maybe you have and you just thought it would be a good one to talk about? You mentioned Dr. Rosedale. And, you know, the interesting thing, we don't talk a lot about Dr. Rosedale now. I mean, he's, you know, I know who he is, you know who he is. He's not one of the big, you know, well-known figures right now. You know, the whole paleo movement, the keto movement, we know a lot of the big names we're hearing from. But the interesting thing is, Dr. Rosedale had this stuff figured out 25 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, it really is.
This isn't new for him.
He has a fascinating, fascinating book. I know.
Yeah, and he had it really well nailed down. Like, you go back and look at the stuff he was saying, and we're saying it today like it's something new. he kind of mm-hmm. had this all figured out. And most of it stemmed from him working with his type 2 patients, trying to figure out how to help his diabetic patients. And what he figured out was the, you know, you certainly had to cut the carbs to help them because that's what caused their problems. But he also learned over time that too much protein, our body would easily mm-hmm. convert it to sugar. And we've talked about this, gluconeogenesis. And the more insulin resistant you are, the easier it is for your body to convert that protein. So the more you've damaged your blood sugar handling, the more strict you have to be on some of these foods. So if carbohydrates cause spikes in blood sugar and insulin, and protein can do it, then what's left to eat? The only thing left to eat was fat. And he found that fat worked really well and there didn't seem to be any downside. The problem is we were all told fat was going to kill us all. And mm-hmm. we believed it for so long that his message just never got through. It was kind of the same thing with Atkins at the time. Atkins got the message out for weight loss, but the message kind of got screwed up in the fact that everybody thought it was a high-protein diet, and it never was. It was a high-fat diet. So we've talked about this many, many times that, you know, we know when you get rid of the carbohydrates, things get better. The tougher one is the protein. It's easy to overdo, and we've just got to keep that in mind. There seem to be two groups of food that one of them everybody, I think, has always agreed on, that there's just no downside to it, and that's vegetables. I don't think anybody has ever said, oh, no, you have to be careful, don't eat too many vegetables. We know that you can't really overdo them. So find ways to eat lots of vegetables. Figure out recipes, whatever it is. Find ways to eat lots of vegetables because there doesn't seem to be any way to eat too many of them. But now we're also mm-hmm. finding out that there is another group out there, a macronutrient, that it's virtually impossible to overdo, and that's fat. Your body will self-regulate. You can't eat too much fat. Mm-hmm. And there doesn't seem to be any downside to eating fat. It performs a lot of great functions in our body. It keeps us very satisfied. I think it keeps our appetite normalized so that we don't overeat. So now you come back to Michael Pollan's three statements. Eat food. We know what that means now, real food. Not too much. I think that one people struggle with. What do you mean not too much? We all seem to overeat, and we all think that's why we're fat, but it's because we're eating foods that aren't satisfying our body nutritionally, for one. You know, our body needs nutrition, and it knows when we get it, and it knows when we don't. So if we eat but we don't get nutrition, our body's going to say, hey, you're not done. You've got to keep eating. And we also know that there's a more complicated mechanism working here with insulin and something Dr. Rosedale points out a lot and a lot of other people aren't talking about, which is leptin, which is another hormone. And some people now believe it's like the master hormone. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of an interesting take that he has. And the one thing we know is fat doesn't play into any of this other than keeping us satisfied so that we won't overeat. And then, you know, mostly plants. That's his next sentence because, again, I don't think we can overdo plants and there's no real downside and there's a lot of benefits. So, you know, you can start to see how there's a lot of complicated stuff. There's a lot of people disagreeing on things, but we really can simplify this. You know, I want to touch a little bit more on the leptin and then give you a chance to talk about some things. Then we'll get to some calls. The interesting thing about leptin, this is another area where if you start reading this, you can get confused. This can get really complicated, what's going on with insulin and leptin and ghrelin and our appetite. And there's all these chemical things happening. Here's the good news. we need leptin to be working properly in our body. Our body can become leptin resistant, just like it can become insulin resistant, and that's where all the problems come in. We know a lot about insulin because we've been studying it for a very, very long time. We don't know a lot about leptin. It was only discovered fairly recently. But here's the good news. We don't really even have to talk much about leptin. We don't really need to understand it much because in order to improve our body's leptin sensitivity, which is what we want to do, we don't want our body to become leptin resistant, we would do all the exact same things that we do to keep our body from becoming insulin resistant. It's all about food and diet, and it's all the same thing. Low carbohydrate, moderate protein, high fat. And the longer you do that, the better your body will use that leptin in the right way, and everything gets back to normal.
Yeah, it all comes down to, you know, it's reading where it's, you know, comes right back to that inflammation, and it's everything that we talk about to be our most healthy self, you know, just not just nourishing our body, but, you know, getting good sleep and, you know, just addressing the whole person, like you said, is going to take care of any issue as far as insulin resistance or leptin resistance.
Yeah, you know, there's a good, really good point you just brought up there. Last week, I think it was, I talked about we have to get away from looking at nutrients. And I know that sounds kind of crazy, but we just, when we focus on a nutrient at a time, we tend to just ignore the fact that our body uses many, many nutrients in combination with other nutrients. And I think it's so complicated we may never understand it, and we don't need to. But we should stop looking at a nutrient saying, oh, you need more of this, and you need more of this, so we're going to focus on this nutrient. We need to just look at whole, real food. But I also got thinking about that in our medical system now. You know, if you go back far enough, doctors were just doctors. You had a doctor, and if you got sick or injured, you went to that doctor, and he figured out what he needed to do. Well, today, we are so incredibly specialized in medicine that you have doctors that work on one thing and one thing only. And I think that is a huge problem in our medical system. We think it's good because you want that guy that knows everything there is to know about your heart. And we don't want him thinking about skin or eyes or anything else. We want him to focus on the heart because we want him to be as good as he can possibly be. What we're finding, though, is when you focus on just the heart, and all this guy knows is if I do this, this improves. But what he's not paying attention to is what if that's screwing up seven other things in our body? So I think we've got to get away from this intense focus on here's a nutrient or here's a one organ in the body and we're going to do this one thing to make this one organ healthier. I think that's a really unhealthy way of looking at this. I think that's where the word holistic comes in. We need to look at the whole of things, not just the parts. All right, well, it looks like we blew through another segment, so what do you say we come back and get to some calls?
Sounds great. Looking forward to it. Thanks, Kevin.
All right. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Kim Cockerham is with me. So, Kim, we've got some questions. Anything you want to throw into the mix, or should we get to the calls?
No, let's go right to the calls, because that's where we really dive into a lot of great stuff.
Yeah, let's do that. We're going to start off in Texas. Bill, welcome to the program.
Well, hi, Kevin and Kim.
Hi, Bill.
Hey there.
I spoke with you last week. We actually closed out the show last week. I was telling you about my experience, my initial resistance to picking up the health topic and what great results I had once I finally started. The question that I was getting to before we ran out of time was, I've got a son that believes that you know, the ketogenic, or maybe in his case, paleo is appropriate, is about weight loss. And what I'm wondering is what references, what materials could you direct me to share with him the other benefits beyond weight loss?
You know, one of the things I would address with him, and I think this might help a lot of people, is instead of using the term weight loss, I've started using the term weight normalization, because sometimes people will come to me and they're underweight, but they've got arthritis and IBD and Crohn's and eczema, and they've got all kinds of health problems. They're underweight, and they're afraid to go on a ketogenic diet because they've heard about all this crazy weight loss. Well, it isn't necessarily weight loss. It's weight normalization. Our body, I mean, if you look at animals in the wild, animals are never overweight. They are their normal weight for their species. You don't see a fat lion, and you don't see a skinny elephant. They are their normal weight, and there's a very tight range. You know, adult male lions all weigh about the same, and adult male elephants weigh about the same. There are some genetic differences, but for the most part, they have a normal weight, and they don't have to think about it. They don't have to read a diet book to be that way. That's how nature works. Our diet of non-food and food-like substances has hijacked our weight normalization mechanism, and that's kind of what we were talking about. The leptin is one of the master hormones here, and we've kind of screwed up our mechanisms. So that's one of the ways I would approach it with them, that if you were underweight, this diet actually puts weight on some people, because it normalizes their appetite. It gets them the nutrients they need. So that's another thing I would approach with him. If he's, you know, into athletics and he wants better performance, then start to talk to him about how whole, real food and nutrition will help with performance and strength and endurance and recovery and all of those things. One of the books I would recommend is The Art and Science of Low Carbohydrate Performance. That's
okay.
The title of the book. And that's by Finney and Volek. Really, really good information. I would also go online and look for a place where you can have him watch the movie called Serial Killers 2. What's the subtitle for that one, Kim? Is it Run on Fat?
Run on Fat. Yeah.
Do you know what the second one was?
No, because that's the one I focused on, was the Run on Fat.
Yeah,
but
and have them watch the first one, too.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well,
sorry.
Yeah, at this point, it kind of, to a teenager, kind of feels almost like a punishment taking all the sugar out of the house. But, you know, I want him to avoid the pitfalls that I found myself, you know, in mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, the metabolic syndrome and such. Because I don't think any of us, I think some of us, our metabolisms delay it longer than others. But I don't think any of us will walk away free staying on this standard American diet.
We won't. And there's that's kind of why, and the second one, actually the title is Run on Fat, and that's Serial Killers 2. That's okay. The one I think I would have him watch, because that one is a lot about athletes and performance. And you talk about none of us will escape this. I think this movie was one of the best examples I've seen. Sammy Inkin in one of the top triathletes in the world. You can't possibly work out more than these guys do. There's nothing more you could do. They train and train and train and train. They eat what we thought was healthy. And he was eating a clean diet, but with all the carb loading he was doing, at a very young age, he was pre-diabetic. And you know, technically, he was taking all of the best advice we thought we were being given, and he was doing it as much as you could possibly do it. And yet, he was pre-diabetic until he learned that our bodies are just not meant to burn glucose at that kind of level. That we do far, far better burning fat and keeping the sugar very low. And then what we do find, and I think athletes are starting to learn this, is once you get your body to be a fat-burning machine, that the body was designed to burn both types of fuel. We're okay burning glucose. We just don't want to be burning it 100% of the time. And when we do, our body can never burn the fat. But if we get our body normalized again and we're primarily burning fat, well, then you can grab some carbohydrates and get a quick shot of energy. You just have to be careful you're not doing that all the time. Our body can burn both, and it will burn both, but we have to keep it primarily as a fat burner. And when we take people who have damaged their blood sugar control over decades of eating the wrong way, then they probably shouldn't really ever be looking at that glucose as a source of energy, not for a very long time. I think we've got to repair the damage first.
Right, right. In terms of for an athlete to replenish electrolytes when they've got a break, what would be a good replacement for, say, the sugar-filled Gatorade?
Water and salt, or water and good sea salt, or water and that Light Balance product we talk about that is just a real simple form of potassium, magnesium, and sodium. And those are really your three really important electrolytes. So I would go with that. I mean, I use the Light Balance every day. It goes in my coffee in the morning. It goes in my water during the day. And I have found that I have zero problems with any mineral deficiencies now. So that's a good one. The other one is, one of the snacks that I like is avocado with, like a raw apple cider, coconut vinegar, and sea salt. And that one will give you a really good balance of all three of those minerals and really good fats.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Bill, I'm so glad that you even called to ask for your son, because what he's going to be up against out there, whether team sports or whatever, is just an inundation of, and it's the marketing thing of Gatorade and the power stuff, and actually too much protein and that kind of stuff to replenish it. And there's, and maybe if we can get your email, and there's, when I saw what you wanted to chat about, Kevin, the number one thing I wrote down was The Art and Science of Low Carb Performance. Bill, that is a fantastic book. Fantastic book.
Yeah.
I did Run on Fat, and there were two other websites, actually three. There's another wonderful podcast called Endurance Planet, and that has to do with a lot of athletes. And Tawny, and I met her down at the Ironman Kona. We were standing at the finish line together, and she is helping some athletes, coach them, getting them off the high sugar diets, because they're running into, eventually they're all going to end up with the gas, the gastrointestinal problems on the race course. And she's interviewed Dr. Phil Maffetone, Mark Allen, 6-time world Ironman, does not eat sugar or high processed food. If you look at his website, he's got a great article he just put out in April or May about that. And I just posted something on Destiny Children a couple weeks ago, Kevin, around, you know, I'm a Ohio girl, so with the Cavs winning and being from Akron, LeBron James went ketogenic to become fat burning, lost 64 pounds. That's when he leaned out with the goal of becoming fat burning.
Yeah,
that's
and
wonderful.
Let me get to a break. I do have one more resource on really kind of high-level athletic performance on a keto diet. I'll talk about that when I get back, and then we'll get to more of your calls and questions. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, so quick heads up, we're heading into the fourth segment. And I'm looking at the calls and questions. We're going to start a second hour, but looking at it right now, we have a lot of calls on the line, but not a lot of questions. So if you want a chance to get through in the second hour, press 1 on your phone right now. The sooner you press 1, the higher the odds you'll get through, and they can be any questions at all. We will do health and fitness, but we will do general questions as well. So here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. My co-host is Kim Cockerham. Kim, another really, I like this guy a lot. I don't recommend him a lot because he's a PhD and he gets really, really deep into the science. He's doing a lot of great work on cancer and ketogenic diets on cancer and some other things, but he's also a major power lifter himself. And he's done some pretty amazing stuff on powerlifting and weight training, even in extreme fasting. So I think my son Michael was telling me the other day he did some long multi-day fast and then deadlifted some crazy amount of weight. You know, and most people feel like, you know, you go 8 hours without eating and you feel weak and tired. And he's shown you can go multiple days of fasting and still maintain incredible strength. His name is Dominic D'Agostino, and he's done some amazing research, but and a lot on cancer. But he gets really, really deep into, you know, some of the science. So he's a little harder to read sometimes, but really good material.
Nice. I love seeing all the athletes
going
forward with this and improving it because it's a scary road to switch, you know, because there is a process at first, but if you stick with it, then it's so beneficial.
Yeah. So my son must be listening because he just sent me a text and he said, yes, it was a 7-day fast. So after not eating for 7 days, it was a 7-day fast. He deadlifted 500 pounds, 10 reps.
Wow.
That's incredible. Just pretty amazing stuff. Let's get to some phone calls. We're going to go to Georgia. JW, welcome to the program.
Well, good afternoon, Kevin and Kim. Good day to you.
You too, JW.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, JW Pennystacker checking in from Georgia. Kevin, my question for you today is, and you talking about Dominic, I'm glad you know about him. He's done some great research. I think he is the one responsible, maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, that developed the product called Keto OS, and I'm curious if you know about it and have I'm considering using it. Wonder what your take is on Keto OS product.
You know what? I'm going to go find out. I won't be able to do it right now, but I'm going to try to find out. I would be surprised if he was a part of this. But you might be right. Maybe I missed that somewhere. And I'll tell you why. The most in-depth research I've read on Keto OS and some other products like it came from Dave Asprey, the Bulletproof guy. Mm-hmm. And Dave is a guy that I put a lot of faith in his research. He does really, really crazy in-depth research, and the guy's, you know, just a genius at interpreting it. He does definitely push a lot of limits. There are some things that I think after doing as much testing as he can, he speculates on some things. So we may find in the future that he was really right on some of his stuff, and some of his stuff he may be a little out there. But he did he continues to do a tremendous amount of research on how to get the body to produce more ketone bodies, because we know that's the benefit of being in ketosis. The ketones provide energy, and they're great fuel for the heart, and they're good for the brain and all kinds of things. But we're not real clear on how best to produce more ketones. We know that fasting will do it. We know a high-fat diet can do it, but it's not always, you know, a perfect science. So he developed the Brain Octane product, which is refined form of coconut oil.
You're on that product, and so am I. This product, Keto OS is supposed to put you in ketosis in 59 minutes.
Right, which Dave Asprey has proven doesn't work. In fact, he spent an insane amount of money to produce a product that does put you into ketosis. They finally succeeded at doing it, and it took them a long time and a lot of researchers and scientists and a lot of money, and they finally did it. He said the problem is with the technologies we know of today, it roughly cost about $30,000 to produce a pound of this stuff.
Yeah, I heard that interview. That was with the interview with him and Dominic on Bulletproof Radio was very interesting. My follow-up question.
But let me throw in one more thing. Here's the other thing. We know that people are bio-individual as well. So maybe somebody has tested this stuff, and maybe it is increasing ketone production in some people. Maybe it's not in other people, and maybe we don't understand why or why not yet. The good news here is we can test ketones. So, you know, it seems to me like if you want to try the product and test your ketones, and if you've been testing and you see an increase, well, maybe it does work.
Yeah, it's a bit pricey, but it's certainly affordable for most people. My follow-up question is, based on your experience, what's the relationship correlation between blood ketones and the number on your ketone breath strip? How have you found those correspond with one another?
So I did a lot of this. I would test with the blood, then test with the breath, then test with the blood, then test with the breath, then eat something, then test again, then go exercise, and then test again. For me, what I found is that the breath meter readings correlate very, very well with the blood. For example, if I didn't use my ketonics first and it was reading, say, mid-40s, I could just about tell you that my blood ketones would be in the 1.2, 1.3 range. If I got up into the 50s, it would be probably 1.5 to 2. If I could get into the 60s or 70s on my ketonics meter, I would be up at that 3 level on the blood, which was pretty rare for me. It was hard for me to get up that high. But when I did, they both correlated. There was
Did that work no matter what time of day or
It is a factor. It's interesting you ask. The later in the day, the closer the correlation became. Early in the morning, I tended to get less reliable readings from both of them, and they didn't always correlate as well early in the morning. And there was another time where they didn't correlate at all. In fact, they took off in 2 different directions, and that was after a hard workout. Like I would do a 20-minute high-intensity interval training, 20 minutes. I would check my blood ketones, and they would be through the roof, and I would check my breath ketones, and they would disappear.
Yeah. I sort of similar there. I'm just trying to get some more background on it because of, some inconsistencies. So.
Yeah.
When would be the most reliable somebody? Because JW, I'm glad you asked that question because I love the blood meter, but the strips are just too expensive and I have not invested in a ketonic set. So I would love to know, Kevin, in your opinion, when, if you were getting it, would you feel it's the most reliable time to use it and test it?
Some of it is I like seeing high ketone levels, so I tend to test more late in the afternoon because I get better numbers. I don't know if they're really more accurate. They're higher, so it makes me feel better. They just tended to be a little more variable in the morning. You know, I tend to get more consistent readings when I check afternoon to early evening.
What happens, Kevin, to the ketones when we carry a high number in until we go to sleep? Why is it so low when we get up and check first thing the next morning? What happens?
I assume our body is using those ketones for processes. And this is where we get into the whole energy production and the mitochondria and the Krebs cycle. And you don't hear me talk about this much because this will make everybody's eyes glaze over and they'll run into a bridge abutment. It gets really complicated, and this is where a lot of the new research is going, is what our body chooses to do with the energy that's created. Does it use it for cell growth and muscle growth, or does it use it for maintenance? And we just don't know a lot about this science yet. But I think that's what's happening to the ketones at night. Our body is using it for all the processes that go on while we sleep, which is another thing we don't understand a whole lot of yet. So great questions, great input. I've got to get out of here. We'll see you next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, we're going to get started on a second hour here, and it looks like there may still be some room for questions. So if you jump in right now, we should be able to get to you. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome to the program. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is a new show tonight, and we are doing a carryover from our last program of Destination Health. The website is letstruck.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Look up Destination Health on the Audio Road Network, and you'll find us there. So my co-host is with me today, Kim Cockerham, and this is the show where we talk about you and your health and your fitness and food and nutrition and diseases and drugs and all that other stuff, and we wrap it around the trucking lifestyle, living and working and eating and sleeping on the road in a very small space. And We're finding ways to keep drivers much healthier on the road. And we're going to get to your calls and questions. Kim, welcome back.
Glad to be here, Kevin. Thank you.
Yeah, our goal here is, you know, it's changing and evolving as we do this show more and more and we get more people on board, more feedback. But I my goal here is to take this, what seems to be incredibly complex issue of health, and bring it down to something simple that we can all understand, and we can, because as a species, we lived on this planet for a very, very long time, and we lived very healthy without knowing any of this stuff.
Yeah, and I love that, because it is empowering, I think, to all of us then, that it's not so hard.
It's really not. And our motto around here is just eat real food. You know, if there's one thing, one change you can make, and it doesn't have to be 100%. We're not going to be perfect at this, but be mindful of what you're putting in your mouth and try to make it real food without an ingredient list as often as possible.
Yeah.
And I am finding more and more that when I think about a meal now, think about the way we were kind of brought up and the way we planned our meal, and think about kind of the American plate. And even this has changed. I'm kind of going back to when you and I were growing up. It was more common that families ate together. You know, we usually at least had dinner together. There was a standard plate. And think about it. Our plate was kind of dominated by protein, right? We would kind of build the meal. Like, what do we have tonight? Oh, chicken. What are we having tonight?
Start with
oh,
meat.
pot roast, right? We built our meal around the protein. And then we would have a side that might be a vegetable and a side that was a starch, right? Wasn't that kind of a common meal?
So you
might have a roast and some potatoes and maybe some carrots. That was a meal. Three, you know, portions on a plate, but the protein dominated the plate. And what we don't realize is that was like the first time in history people ate like that. And the only reason we ate like that is because of our factory farming meat. We made it cheap. Because prior to that, meat was expensive. You know, and meat was used in many, many cultures as almost a flavoring agent. So, you know, you might take some pork fat and render it down and then cook vegetables in the pork fat. Or you might make a stew that was, you know, mostly vegetables and broth and a little bit of meat to flavor it. And that was a much healthier way to eat. You know, starting our meal off based on a protein is really not good, and then we made it worse by the way the protein was raised and slaughtered, and we've just become consumers of way too much protein, and our protein isn't very good. It's not sourced well. So what I find myself doing now and helping other people with, and this is kind of even a more recent change for me. I'm saying let's start the thought of the meal off with a vegetable. What could we build up? What vegetable could we build a meal around? Let's start with the vegetable first. Let me give you an example. One I love doing, cauliflower is just an amazing vegetable when you rice it. So now I'll think, okay, I've got a head of cauliflower. I'm going to rice it. What dishes might I traditionally have eaten with rice? The other day I did stuffed green peppers. You know, so typically you would take rice and sausage and maybe some other vegetables and saute those all up, stuff them in a green pepper, pour some tomato sauce over and bake it. But why not do that with cauliflower rice? So I did. So I riced the cauliflower. I threw in some jalapenos because I like a little bit of heat. I threw in some leeks because I just love leeks and they're really good for us. Sauteed that all together. Got some really high-quality sausage. I like spicy, so it was a spicy Italian sausage, no fillers. And I cooked that up, mixed that all up, poured it into a green pepper, put some fresh tomato sauce over it, and I got thinking. Think about that meal. Now, all of the vegetables were sauteed in grass-fed butter, so there was a ton of good fats in there. When the dish was served, I sliced up some avocados and threw that on there, some extra fat. I actually drizzled a little olive oil over it when it was done, so I added some more good fats there. But when you think about that meal, by volume, it was probably 85% vegetable. I mean, there was the green pepper that it was in. There was the cauliflower rice, which was the base for the filling. There were leeks and mushrooms and more vegetables in the filling. There was a little bit of sausage. And then I cooked everything and topped it with a lot of fat. And that's really, I think, a really good way to approach your meal. How can I get as many vegetables on the plate, and then how can I make it taste so good that I'm going to want to eat it all? And that's where the meat and the fat come in. Because honestly, mm-hmm. for most of us, vegetables aren't things we get really excited about. I mean, there are some vegetables I absolutely love, grilled asparagus, but I don't think we get really excited about the vegetables themselves. So I'm really starting to move towards and help other people say, let's get as many vegetables on the plate as we can and then figure out how to make them taste so good we're going to eat them all. So another one, I like a little bit of cooked and a little bit of raw. So I'm working more towards, okay, there's the dish. I cooked it. It's nice and hot. But I throw some cold avocado on the side, slice up some fresh tomato and put it on the side.
Mm-hmm.
I like jalapenos, so I might eat those. Slice up cucumbers, throw a little sprout, you know, some fresh sprouts on the plate. It's almost like eating like a vegetarian, but we're going to throw in a little bit of protein and a lot of fat, and we're going to make vegetables really, really good.
That's awesome. And, you know, you said it was just recent, you know, that you even thought that way, and that's exactly what I was thinking when you were talking. I just caught myself. It's a habit that I've done that as well. And I think that's where, as a matter of fact, we just had cauliflower rice last night too, and I just, every time I have that dish, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, this is so good.
I know.
And it's not just for lunch and dinners anymore. Have a humongous salad for breakfast sometime and put some, you know, hard-boiled egg and all that on top as well. I get excited for vegetables when you think about it. Think of the color and the flavors, and it's a great way, especially for drivers, too, to do the component cooking we talk about, or the component eating, where you could have all this cut up ahead of time and, you know, and do it at home with somebody, you know, give you a chance to talk while you're cutting up your vegetables. And it's really, really an amazing thing to add to your lifestyle.
Yeah, well, I'll give you another great one I made last night. When did I make the peppers? I don't remember, because I usually make two meals a day. And I, you know, they're usually, you know, kind of mid-afternoon and then dinner kind of thing. And we have some family members over, so I've been cooking even more to make sure everybody has food. But last night I did, I made lamb meatballs because I just love lamb. So I used ground lamb and made lamb meatballs. Just did some, you know, kind of Greek seasoning, some oregano and a little bit of dill and a lot of garlic, and made the meatballs. Then I made zoodles, which are the spiralized zucchini noodles. So I made those. And
mm-hmm.
then I made a really good tzatziki sauce, and I'll come back and I'll talk a little bit about that. And that was, oh my God, it was so good. I'm making myself hungry now just thinking about it. We'll come back and we'll talk about that in just a minute, and then we'll get to your calls and questions. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. My co-host is Kim Cockerham. Kim, I'm going to get back to that recipe in just a second. But on the last show, we were talking with JW, and he was asking about a product called Keto OS. And there are actually several companies now working on products. And what the term that you'll hear is exogenous ketones. And what that means is they are produced outside of the body. So our body produces ketones. There are companies trying to figure out how to get ketones into our body. If they're produced outside, that's called an exogenous ketone. And he had mentioned that he thought Dominic DiAgostino was part of that company. And my son Michael sent me a link on Facebook, and I'll send this over to you so we can get it posted. He wasn't really a part of any one of these companies. He did the testing for all of them. So he did have some part of it in here, and there are some results that he goes through on this page, and I don't really have time to read it while I'm trying to talk. But I'll send it over to you, and we can post it up on our Facebook page.
Okay, sounds good.
If people want to do some more reading on that. That's still pretty new science, according to Dave Asprey. We're just not there yet. It's just not going to happen. And again, I'm going to just jump in here. This isn't a topic that really interests me much at all, because even if they manage to do this, even if they come up with an exogenous ketone that's produced outside of my body, but it makes my ketone levels go up, I'm not going to take it. This is one where I don't see the need. I have found, and I think most people will find, that diet that allows them to produce ketones and be in ketosis.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't. Mm-hmm. I haven't found really any difference in the way I feel from when I'm producing, 1.5 or 3.
Right.
And if my body can do it naturally with food, I'm just not a big fan of introducing something like this that we know so little about.
I agree. I just, it's just an example to me of when something starts becoming more mainstream and, populations start to do more ketones, that somebody's going to try to find a way, because somebody's going to want a pill or a drink or something to make it happen easier or something. But I had looked at the ingredients on that too. I mean, stevia, caffeine, I just go back to those, like what we teach is the whole real food and, listen to your body.
Yeah. So, but if people want to read more, we'll post that so they can go see some of that science.
Perfect.
So back to the recipe. So the tzatziki sauce, if you've ever had a gyro, some people say gyro, that's the sauce that you typically get on there. And the meat is usually mostly lamb. So it was kind of like a takeoff of a gyro, but I don't want the pita, obviously. So I was just thinking, I love those flavors. How can I get those flavors onto the plate and make it really healthy? So I thought, okay, I'll make the lamb meatballs. Those are healthy. I'll cook them in some duck fat. That's healthy and yummy. And then I'll spiralize the zucchini to make zoodles or noodles. And then I made the tzatziki sauce, which is whole fat yogurt with no sugar. I use an organic yogurt that's just milk and cultures, nothing else in it. Red onion, cucumber, dill, and lots of garlic. And then I put in some lemon peel, and that's the sauce. And then I took the noodles, the zoodles, and threw on a pile of meatballs and covered it with that tzatziki sauce. Oh my God, was that good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was, and again, think about it.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big plate full of vegetables with a little bit of protein and some high quality fats to make it taste really good.
Mm-hmm. And lots of flavor. Yeah. Sounds fabulous.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're getting the zucchini, the onion, you can throw some leek in there, the dill, we're finding that fresh herbs have a lot of really nutrition in them, and you're getting the cucumber and the good high-quality yogurt, And, you know, I put a little olive oil over it again when I was done. I like finishing. I'm finding that if you get a good quality olive oil, you don't want to cook with it. You don't want to heat olive oil. Mm-hmm. But I'm finding as a way of adding more fat to my plate, I drizzle olive oil almost over any finished dish. When the dish is all done and it's on your plate, drizzle a little olive oil on it. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. Nice idea.
Yeah.
Good idea.
So what do you say we get to some phone calls?
Yeah, now that we've made everybody hungry.
That's right.
That sounds good.
Yeah, maybe we should, you know, we should start the program off with a book review and a recipe every week.
And a recipe. Well, and I hope everybody knows that is on our plate. Per se, that we are going to gather more information for people on recipes because we get that request a lot. And it's just neat. It's neat to hear what other people are cooking because then you think, oh, yeah, I'm going to try that. And it should be fun and adventurous with food.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, I had something else, but we'll save that for another show. Let's get to some phone calls. We're off to Virginia. Andre, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. And hello, Kim.
Hello, Andre.
Hey there.
My question is, I started having problems with the air fingers quote American diet when I noticed what happened to my mother and my aunt. I lost my mom a few years ago to skin cancer, and my aunt is in a home with Parkinson's. And yet my grandparents lived well into their late 90s. So I started thinking that something wasn't right with what they're telling us about what is and isn't healthy. And then I met you guys, and I've been listening, and I just made a switch to Whole Foods, or rather Real Foods. I'm trying to kick pop out of my diet, but one of the problems with the American diet is Americans really have no idea what a healthy-sized portion of food is. So I'm looking to go keto-adapted. I think I'm going to do that in about the next month or so. But I wanted some more facts. Is there a book that talks about portion sizes? What's the measurement of carbs to proteins to fat? I was thinking maybe it might be in that book, Keto Clarity, but I figured I'd give you a call today and ask.
There is some information in Keto Clarity about that, but let me talk a little bit about it. You won't ever really hear me talk about portion sizes, and that's kind of an artifact of our poor diet and our fascination with dieting to lose weight. When we should forget about losing weight, we should forget about dieting. We should just have a healthy whole food diet, and we wouldn't have to think about all of this other stuff anyway. Again, let's go back to animals in the wild or when we were wild. When a wild animal, let's take a carnivore, when a wild animal kills something, do you think it ever worries about portion size?
No, it just gorges itself, eats all it can, and then it waits until next time.
Yeah, and it waits until it's hungry again. And
right.
when we eat the right foods, it's amazing. I experience this every day, and I'm still amazed by it. Our appetite works perfectly. I there are days where I feel like I am gorging myself, where I think, my God, I'm eating a lot today. Then there are other days where the day's over, and I think, did I eat? You know, what did I eat today? I don't remember eating. I don't think about it anymore. I don't obsess over it. If I'm hungry, I eat, and I eat until I'm not hungry anymore. And if I'm not hungry, I don't eat. And it doesn't matter whether I go 2 or 3 days without eating much, or I go 2 or 3 days where I feel like I'm eating a lot. My weight never changes. This is the most stable my weight has ever been, because this is the way our body is supposed to work. If we're hungry, we eat. We could eat a lot if we want. And if we're not hungry, we don't eat. And our hunger will happen the way it's supposed to happen. If our body needs nutrition, it will signal hunger. And if we eat nutritious food, then we'll be satisfied. And it's just amazing how simple it really is, but we have thrown it totally out of whack with the American diet. And there's all kinds of scientific reasons and insulin and leptin and blood sugar and all this other stuff. But to simplify it, when you start eating real nutritious food and we get over our fat phobia and we eat enough fat, you don't have to think about portion size. Now, having said all that, in the beginning, I'm going to give you some guidelines so that you don't overdo certain things. Because I know we need that help, and I know that's what you're asking for right now. I think our ultimate goal should get to the point where we don't even have to think about this. I'm kind of there now. I have a way of eating, and I don't have to think about calories or size or how often or any of that stuff. We'll be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. My co-host is Kim Cockerham. And before the break, we were talking with Andre in Virginia. So, Andre, here's some guidelines to kind of get you into this. And the longer you do it, the less you have to track and the less you have to think about things. For the most part now, I don't track anything. The only time I'm going to track anything is if I'm trying to test something. But for me, if I wasn't doing this show and I wasn't trying to help other people, I would no longer track anything. I mean, I know how to eat now, and I don't have to think about it. I don't have to count anything. But I get in the beginning, you need to. So here's what I want you to count in the beginning. The number for carbohydrates in the beginning, there is no such thing as too low, in my opinion. If you can get yourself under 20 grams of carbs a day, that's outstanding, and it's pretty hard to do because there are carbs in a lot of different foods. But if we eliminate all the grains, which I think is a really important first step, that means getting rid of all the wheat or anything with wheat in it, all the rice or anything with rice or rice flour or rice syrup, get rid of all of those. Get rid of corn, get rid of oats, get rid of white stuff like white flour, white potatoes, white sugar. Get rid of all that stuff. Once you do that, your carb count is naturally going to be about 75% lower than it used to be because that's where most of our carbs are coming from. Now, you could still overdo the carbs if you ate too many fruits, so we want to really be careful with fruit. If you ate too many starchy vegetables, sweet potatoes, carrots, things like that, you could still end up overdoing the carbs a little bit. I wouldn't worry too much about that, but if we, in the beginning, if we want to get into that state of ketosis, there's no number for carbs that's too low. Just keep that in mind.
Okay.
The fewer the carbs, the better in the beginning. The protein is the one we really need to count. Because you don't really have to count carbs, just don't eat them. That's kind of the simple way for me. In the beginning, I'm not going to count my carbs, I'm just not going to eat them. And if they slip in here and there, I'm not going to get too worried about it. The protein is the one you've got to watch. We are surrounded by sources of protein. Like I said, we've always built our meals around protein. It's everywhere. It's easy. We can grab, you know, beef sticks and sausage and cheese. They're easy to eat on the road. So you've got to be careful with the protein. In the beginning, I would say try to keep it under 75 grams a day, and I don't care how big you are, how active you are. In the beginning, I would say keep it under 75 grams. Just to give you an idea, a 10-ounce strip, a 10-ounce strip steak is about 70 grams of protein.
Okay.
So it doesn't take much. And remember, there's protein in nuts, there's protein in cheese, there's protein in all dairy, there's protein in all meat, there's protein in vegetables. It's just not always complete. So you got to watch the protein. That's the one you want to count in the beginning and stay under 75 or really under 100 for sure. The good news is on the fat, the beauty is you're going to base your diet mostly around fat. And you can't overdo the fat. It's my opinion, you just can't overdo it. Your body won't let you. If you eat enough fat, your body is going to say, stop. Stop, I've had enough. And I think that's where a lot of the appetite control comes in. When you eat enough fat, your body just says, hey, look, I'm satisfied. Especially if you're getting fat and nutrition.
Okay, and now I have one final question, Kevin. Because I am a huge rice fan. How do you rice a cauliflower?
You are going to be amazed at how simple this is. Mm-hmm. So you know the little pyramid style cheese grater?
Yes. Oh God.
Yeah,
That's it.
Just grab one of those. Use the big side, not the really little side. Use the big side, and just grab a head of cauliflower.
Okay.
Start grating it. It comes out perfect.
It freezes really well, too, Andre, so go at it and make a bunch of it ahead of time.
I'm going to blow my kid's mind when I make stir-fried chicken with that.
Yeah, I use it everywhere I would use rice. Now, I've played around when I made the stuffed peppers the other day. I left it completely raw. I didn't cook the riced cauliflower ahead of time at all. And I only bake my stuffed peppers for about 25 minutes. So mine come out really, really crispy still. And you could tell the cauliflower was there. You could taste it. You could feel the texture. In other recipes, I'll take the riced cauliflower and throw it in simmering water for about 2 minutes and then drain it. And then it kind of softens up and gets a little more of a less crunchy kind of texture. So you can play around with, you know, how much you want to cook, or in some dishes you can leave it raw.
All right. Well, thank you, Kevin. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Hey, Andre,
I have a quick
question, Kevin, for Andre. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Because, Andre, you said two things that you said, you know, now Kevin gave some really, really good guidelines on how to get started and how simple it is. But you mentioned about maybe not doing it for a month. Is there any reason why you wouldn't get started right away?
Well, first of all, I mean, I was remembering what Kevin was saying about people when they first go keto adapted, they feel really, I don't know, just like really crummy because you're getting the sugars out, and I figured I would just make sure that I'm kicking off and getting rid of my Mountain Dew, because that stuff is that's the worst thing in my diet right now. And then it also gives me a little bit of time to get a few more items for the truck, because I always like to build up what I need over time. So just get a couple more accessories for the truck so that I can cook on the truck and cook healthier food.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, if you, start with that pop thing, you could start with that pop thing right away and start weaning yourself off if you haven't.
I'm done.
Good for you.
Let me give you a good substitute for the Mountain Dew. It's not perfect, but it really helps a lot of people get sparkling mineral water, like, there's Evian, there's what's the expensive one in the green bottles? From there's some Italian sparkling mineral waters. Get those, put it in a big water bottle with a little bit of ice, and squeeze in some lime some lime juice,
okay.
just straight lime juice in there, and then a cap full of that Light Balance.
Mm-hmm.
And if you drink that, if you were to drink, say, 30 to 40 ounces of that a day, that goes a long, long way towards getting rid of a lot of the keto flu symptoms people talk about. And it kind of is a substitute for the pop, because you're getting the effervescence
mm-hmm.
and the bubbles, and you know, you're getting some of the flavor from the lime juice, and the Light Balance is salty, so it kind of gives it some body and a little bit of saltiness, and it will also help with a lot of those symptoms.
Now, do they sell the Light Balance in stores, like, or do I have to get it on the internet?
I've never seen it in the store. I order it from Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I'll need to make a phone call today then.
There you go.
There you go.
Good stuff. Get all started, and stay in touch with us and let us know how it's going. Let's go to Nebraska.
Hey,
Gary, welcome to the program. Hold on. Gary, wait a minute. Kim, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I always do that. I either have too long a pause or I jump in. But for anybody who does have like a pop thing that they like, you know, a lot of it is the bubbles and so forth. I have a Soda Stream that I use water and add lemon to it. And it is so refreshing, and again, especially for pop people, if it's just, you know, lots of it's just that fizz and it's a treat, but it's a small investment, easy, use it with water and lemon lime, and it's awesome.
Great idea. And that's going to take us into the break, so that was actually good timing. So,
okay.
Gary, we're going to come right back to you right after the break. Yeah, that's a great idea, Kim. I didn't even think about that. I tend to really like – I've always liked sparkling mineral waters. So I find that putting some lime in there and then some of that Light Balance, and it's
mm-hmm.
really satisfying. And I've never been – well, I was a very, very big pop drinker when I was a kid. But mostly in my adult life, I haven't drank much at all. But I find now that I stay more hydrated – if I drink the sparkling mineral waters, because I tend to drink more of them.
Nice. Yeah. That's a little trick to do.
Let's get to a break. We'll be right back with more of your calls and questions right after this. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. I can't believe it. We're already down to the final segment, Kim. We just seem to blow right through these hours.
They're awesome. Learning some good stuff.
Yeah. So let's see how many calls we can get to. Let's go to Nebraska. Gary, now it's your turn.
Hi, Kim and Kevin.
Hi there.
See, I go in and out of ketosis. You know, I'm the one that likes to stay away from home because I like beer. I actually quit drinking beer because it doesn't do me any good. It's been more than drink. So I do have a vodka once in a while just because I can. But I go in and out of ketosis, and it doesn't faze me anymore. You know, I don't gain any weight. I can, you know, I eat off and on, you know, good foods and stuff when I'm at home. I mainly eat good when I'm on the road. You know, so, but I used to get headaches when I would even start to eat a burger, you know, but I like to have burger or a popcorn once in a great while, nothing serious. That I always go right back to my eggs and my spinach and kale and all that stuff. And then, you know, so I, you know, it works very well for me. I fluctuate between about 4 pounds for the past 9 months. I've been doing this for since May of last year, so a little over a year. And
well,
I also have a friend.
Go ahead.
Oh, I have that friend that I was telling you about that I hadn't seen in over 35 years, and she jumped in with both feet, and she's down 20 pounds, and she had an appointment that she needed to go to. She normally works out of her house on the computer, and she needed to go for an appointment, and she had a huge problem. She had no clothes that fit her. But she was very happy that she had this problem.
That's right.
Nice.
That's wonderful. So it's interesting that I've noticed the same pattern that you just talked about. If we go back about 6 months and listen to some of the shows, I was talking about going in and out of ketosis, and I could tell without even measuring. I knew what my ketone measurements were going to be before I even took them, just by the way I felt. Well, what's interesting now is I haven't been really tracking ketones in a while, and I'm sure I'm going in and out based on what I'm eating, but I can't tell anymore. I just feel good all the time. And I know I'm going out of ketosis. Some nights I'll have a couple glasses of wine. I know that normally knocks me out. The other day I had a sweet potato because it sounded really good, and on top of the sweet potato, it's blackberry season here in the Northwest, and I could walk out of my house and in a two-hour period collect about a five-gallon bucket right now. We're so loaded with blackberries. So I probably ate, not exaggerating, I bet I ate 3 to 4 cups of blackberries that day too. So I have to believe that with a sweet potato and 3 cups of blackberries, I probably was out of ketosis, but I don't notice it anymore. I feel good no matter what. And I think that's what I was talking about on the other show earlier, that our body truly is designed to burn both fuels, fat and sugar.
Yep.
But I think we should primarily be fat burners. And once we train our body to do that, it will use the glucose if it's there, as long as we don't overdo that over an extended period of time. And I think that's where my body is now. I think it's burning both fuels, and I still feel good.
Yep. I did end up with I had a load of ice cream. I pull refrigeration now. And I had a load of ice cream. Little case or whatever. I had like a case of ice cream, you know, and I hadn't had ice cream for a while, and it was free. You know, so I started to eat the one pint, and I ended up where I could fit 4 of them in my freezer. After eating that one pint, I gave the other 3 away because I got a headache for about 20 minutes to a half an hour, and it went away. And then that's all I had.
Yeah.
So I ate the full pint.
Well, there you go. Ice cream is one of my favorites, no question. I love ice cream. But I am to the point now where I won't use a bowl. I just eat it out of the carton because I tend to eat less. I will eat 2 or 3 or 4 tablespoons, and then I'm done, and I put it away. So a little thing of ice cream might last me 4 or 5 days. And I try to get, you know, the higher quality 2 or 3 or 4 ingredients. And again, Kim, I just don't. I don't feel myself going in and out of ketosis like I was talking about a couple months ago. I just feel the same now, and I know I'm going in and out.
Yeah, but I think it's cool, like what Gary was saying, too. You know, sometimes we can get so rigid, and this is not a diet, it's lifestyle. So let yourself have, you know, some enjoyment, some time, and again, stick with still the, you know, real food. You can still eat good food and sweet potatoes with blackberries, like you said, and not worry too much if it's throwing you out. You can tell what your body feels like.
Right, right. In the beginning, I like the idea of being really strict. The more damage you've done to your body, the stricter you're going to have to be and the longer you're going to have to do it. So if you are a true type 2 diabetic, you're going to have to be lower carb for a longer period of time. if you're pretty athletic and not overweight and you're just doing this for health, you could probably go into a fairly modified state of ketosis right from the beginning and still get a lot of the benefits. So this comes back to what we talk about, and it's one of the things I love about the NTP program, is that bio-individuality. We're all different. There is no one-size-fits-all with this.
Yeah, and some people, Jimmy talked at CMC about, are so metabolically damaged. It's going to take longer. But, yeah, be
right.
One person.
Yeah, so good stuff. And we can be here to kind of help you guide you through that based on what you're going through. Let's go to California. Will, welcome to the program.
Thanks for taking my call, guys. Love hearing all your stuff. Good extension of the driver health, talking about our real health instead of our financial. And I sometimes feel at a plateau. I'm fairly active. I have one of those Fitbits, so I keep track of my movements. But I put on a couple miles a day, but, you know, not in one sitting over the course of the day. And just looking for some possible bits. Do want to get that. I have actually access to write down that bulletproof coffee recipe, but, that's where we're at.
So give me some numbers. When you say plateau, I'm assuming we're talking about weight loss.
Yeah, I have to, because of my allergies, one of the things they put me on is a proton pump inhibitor because I was getting the acid reflux going on, and I know that's changed me, and it seems like I've got this one portion of my belly that, my waist goes down, my arm, everything else is trimmed up, but I've got this one spot in the belly that just, it's staying there, and I feel like I can't get past over the edge to get it.
Okay, did you happen to listen to the shows we did on the NTP process and primarily the two shows on digestion?
No, I missed that. Is there a...
Okay, so, Go to the website, letstruck.com, look under the audio road tab, and then destination help, and then they'll be labeled NTP part one, part two, and I think we even put in, digestion, blood sugar handling. You listen to the whole series because it's really good, but primarily on digestion, I covered all of the problems with proton pump inhibitors. You've got to get off of those. They're going to kill you.
I've been weaning it down to where I barely, I know that it's kind of my weight probably causes some of the need. If I could get things reduced down, I would probably have less of the acid reflux. And
well,
I've been trying
it's
to.
It's also the other way around. The acid reflux was a symptom. And the proton pump inhibitors gets rid of the symptom but exacerbates the problem. One of the reasons we're overweight is because we're not getting enough nutrition. We're getting too many calories but not enough nutrition. One of the reasons we don't get enough nutrition is because we don't have strong enough stomach acid to digest the food to get all the nutrients out of it. Heartburn is a sign of our stomach acid is too weak, not too strong. But then we take a proton pump inhibitor to stop it. Now we can't get the nutrition. So we are going to be overweight and diabetic and all those other things. It starts with nutrition. So go back and listen to that show. Call us again next week, and we'll talk more about that because that's a specific problem with you we could address, and we can fix that one pretty quick. Any final words, Kim, before we've got to get out of here?
Everybody text LT Health to 99,000 and get our messages each day. Keep going with us.
Oh, great. I love those messages, by the way, Kim. I look forward to them every day. We got to get out of here.
Thanks.
Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. always do the hard work and master the journey. All right, everybody. Thanks. Great questions. And we'll do this again next week. Thanks, Kim. Great stuff.
Thanks a lot. Bye, everyone.